pants.
Oh, that must be a scary little trip to make.
Yeah, I was carrying 7,000 hey eyes on my last trip to Brazil.
Nossa, it was mãe.
Terrifying.
No.
And also a plug for Two Brothers, the nonprofit. That's you can check them out at two bros.org, especially if you're interested in donating or volunteering to teach English, French, Spanish, any kind of dance, art, photography, music, whatever you'd like to do, we can accommodate you.
Wow.
You can live in Rocinha, which is a fascinating experience. I highly recommend it.
Sorry, can you repeat the address again? I feel
like twobros.org. The number two, B-R-O-S dot org. It's the Two Brothers Foundation. And finally, my own thoughts and sounds at beatdiaspora.com, where I blog about the interaction of urban space and music. And that covers the basics.
There you go.
So we've got Sani Pichibul, one of the stars of our label, of our CD in the background here with Faro SG. And then as you finish off with your announcements, we're going to fade out to a nice reggae tune from Digital Dubs Sound System.
Excellent.
Called Africa Digital.
Ótimo. Pois, tem sido grande prazer.
Foi grande prazer.
Ah, você vai ter que voltar pra gente aqui em Boston, rapaz. Vai ter que voltar.
Eu quero. Tenho saudade de Boston, já tenho.
Já tô ainda... com um pé assim saindo da porta, mas eu tô com saudade, né?
Adoro.
All right. So... moving into some reggae.
Reggae with a funk beat in the back, I should add.
Very nice. In time for us to give you the Sferio announcements. In honor of our special guest, we're focusing on Brazilian music coming up this weekend and on into the next week, actually. Tomorrow, Saturday night, Los Sugar Kings. Actually, they're not Brazilian music specifically. Sorry, I lied. 9:45 p.m.
Mentira!
They're playing at Johnny D's in Somerville. They bill themselves as a Latin rock band, but I think that you will find that they cover a wide range of sounds, including son, salsa, and a lot more of the rock en español type of sound. That's Johnny D's in Somerville tomorrow night. On Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m., Choro Democrático will be doing an afternoon performance at the Sackler Museum at Harvard. That's over on the outside part of Harvard Square, across the street from the...
it's Quincy and Broadway.
Quincy and Broadway. Thank you. Thank you for filling me in on the address.
A gente boa.
A gente boa.
Choro Democrático.
Choro Democrático. If you haven't ever heard choro, it's Brazilian jazz, like... very kind of traditional sound. Very different from what we've been playing on the show today. Really nice. Also, August 4th, Receita de Samba will be playing at the Baixa Café out in the Fresh Pond area of Cambridge. That'll be starting at 8 p.m. Baixa Café is a relatively newcomer to the concert scene, I guess. And Receita de Samba, I haven't ever heard them perform personally, but my understanding is they're pretty... you know, basic, straightforward, really solid samba band. Kind of the samba de violão type of style. And then one other thing coming up next week that we did want to mention as well, on the 6th, which I guess is Thursday, at 10 a.m., if you're available to go to check this out, 10 a.m. is a time we don't usually have time to go hear and see new things, but there will be a panel discussion about Honduras with representatives of the some of the civil organizations in Honduras, as well as immigrant rights activists here in Boston. That will be happening at Cabot Hall at Tufts University. That's Thursday morning at 10 a.m. And that's about all we have time to do. Desculpa que eu não vou fazer tradução porque se me acabou o tempo, imagina. Mas se tiver alguma pergunta...
No Brasil sempre tem tempo, aqui sempre compensa.
Aqui sabe como é, tudo contra
começa
a hora.
Na hora.
Né? É. Exatamente, é triste. Mas se vocês tiverem perguntas sobre o que eu acabo de dizer e precisa de alguma tradução, pode escrever para mim que eu respondo. A direção eletrônica esferio. @wmbr.org. Nossa, mãe, eu esqueci como é que fala.
O-R-G
de...
G.
De gato.
O meu nome é Greg, sempre devo escrever, falar. J-R-E-A-J, Greg.
Ay, meu Deus. Okay, it's 7:02 on WMBR Cambridge, and we're sorry we've taken up a little bit of Music for Human Beings time, but we're going. And they're coming right up after this.
مرحباً. مرحباً بكم. I'm الدكتور جالس السكران and I welcome you. Yes, very much welcome to Music for Human. I'm الدكتور جالس السكران, transdermal mediator. And on this extremely intemperate day, I am joined by Ivan the Mellow.
Здравствуйте, товарищи.
Ivan is beyond the glass. I'm not seeing Ivan with a physical sense of the word seeing, but I'm experiencing him psychically.
The spiritual vibrations are quite marked here as well.
Well, the bond is just that great.
It's deep. Indeed.
Ivan, of course, is Siberian.
A Siberian academician. Exiled, unfortunately.
We are also pleased to be rejoined by Lilith the Sorceress. Lilith, welcome.
Thank you. It's fantastic to be back again.
Lilith, out of curiosity, are you responsible for the windiness?
I'm not personally responsible, but I do have a couple of friends that were not enjoying the weather the way that the rest of the people were, and had mentioned things to everyone, and I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have something to do with this. Mm-hmm. It came on so drastically and strongly.
It was somewhat unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
But there is randomness even in nature, so mm-hmm. one never knows. We are also joined for the first time by Frau Dr. Sina, was it?
Pfannkuchen.
Pfannkuchen, who is?
I'm a lecturer on Marxian neologism at the Institute for Intermediate Studies.
The famous Institute of Intermediate Studies located here in Boston or?
And beyond.
And beyond. So it's the global institute.
We have not yet globalized, but we are on our way.
And your specialty is Marxian?
Marxian neologism.
Marxian, excellent. And we are also pleased to be joined by George, the Mayan shaman. George, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
George, where is Maya?
Where is Maya? Maya is everywhere, but I suppose you could say we're based out of Mesoamerica.
Mesoamerica, of course, being Mexico.
Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, Belize.
Excellent. And being a Mayan shaman in particular must be somewhat difficult now with rapidly evolving medical procedures, the LASIK procedure.
You would think, although actually it seems to drive people to us.
Out of the alarm that perhaps... these procedures are being done to remove fat from one part of the body and replace it somewhere else.
I would say that's an accurate assumption.
Of course, I'm referring to the prevalence now of the liposuction procedure and then the lipoinsertion procedure, so removing the fat from one's derriere and inserting it into the cheeks, for instance, or the chin. And these are cosmetic procedures, but they are the ones that are the most alarming to me, personally.
Well, I suppose that those have some bearing on things. People do tend to come to us after those kinds of procedures just to, you know, sanctify them.
To reconnect, so to speak.
Yes.
Because it is hard to know one's relationship with the universe when one's fat is moving around.
when it shifted so drastically from one end to the other, what else can you do?
Precisely, one needs some reference point.
I couldn't have put it better.
My apologies, I was just mixing something in the background and it seems to have gone a little bit awry. My apologies.
Well, it's a lovely, relaxing sound. I thought someone must be having some club soda somewhere in the studio. And
I received some new ingredients today. George actually purchased them and brought them to Boston for me, and I can't quite say on air what they are. I'm not sure it's a legal substance in Boston, but
no, customs would have a real problem with me. Well, and they know where I am.
No, the substances in question are not actually on the books as being illegal.
No.
But they certainly, if it were widely known that they were in use, then their legitimacy would be called into question.
Yes, a perfect example of something that I do mix, but this was not one of them, would have been toads in Mesoamerica seem to grow third eyes. And it was one of those that could have been something similar.
Yeah, and I mean, this is another example of the rapidly changing time and how difficult it is for an organism to understand one's place in relation to the changes.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we can see this as yet another example of commodity fetishism, that once these products, if we are to call them products, are reified as products, when they're brought over the border and subject to these kinds of regulations, they're no longer toads, but simply commodities.
Absolutely.
Like gold or ketchup or other commodities. And it's interesting to imagine that natural things are being traded in that way. It's shocking.
I would actually propose that these are not natural. Not natural suggests that they are somehow inured with an inherent nature that was not ascribed to them by humankind. What I would propose instead is ecology without nature. That is, we can have an environmental movement, a sense of connectedness, without suggesting that Mother Nature is the loving mother that we would like to imagine. She is actually a cruel mistress who will destroy her children with a whim. It's a matter of chaos.
Mm-hmm. Like Mother Goose.
Perhaps. The ducklings may cross the street and get hit by a car.
And
then we have the state stepping in and stopping the traffic.
But all of these things really are natural.
I think we can call them ecological.
It depends on how you define natural.
Well, yeah, these are tricky questions. Nature itself is such a moving, changing beast. We've described many times in the program about how nature seems to have created man, and only now, after man's existence for hundreds of thousands of years, does the reason become clear, or one possible reason, which is plastic.
Yes.
The generation of plastic and the desire of nature to have plastic.
Really all petroleum products.
But see, all of these things would not ever, I think, have occurred naturally. But now nature has little bits of plastic which it can roll into the new paradigm of life, you know, in the coming years as man is extincted and the new beings that are to come.
Now, Dr. Jalis,
plastic-based life forms.
I have to cut in as a long follower of the Marxist-Leninist
I'm reminded
tradition.
Of a phrase I hear frequently in New Age circles in this country, go with the flow. In thinking of these circulating plastic bags and plastic containers rotating around in an ocean, the Sargasso Sea perhaps, between one continent and another, never reaching the shore, never reaching a human being, but mm-hmm. simply circulating around each other with the water, lulling them into a giant conglomerate at the center, till it grows larger and larger, and we know not where it goes, but it seems not to move, though it does.
Yeah, but I'm you know, thinking of nature as an economic system is, I think, natural for a Marxist, but little unusual for a naturalist who maybe would think of economy as part of nature. But I think Brother Ivan was saying something a moment ago.
So, as a follower of the Marxist-Leninist tradition, I guess I was intrigued by this new guest on the show, and I wanted to find out more about this Marxist neologism that is supposed to be the emphasis of our new guest.
Well, I suppose there are two words. First, Marxian. I think it's important to say Marxian and not Marxist, because we are not wedded to Marx. He is not my husband, that is. He is simply an informer of my thinking and those around me. He's one of many authors of books that one may read. And the second is a neologism, the focused on novelty, newness, and the creation of new languages, new words that we can use to describe contemporary circumstances that were not around at the time of Marx.
Interesting. So how would you characterize the current economic climate in terms of Marxian neologisms?
I believe there are a multiplicity of ways that one may describe the current system. How would you describe it in terms of your Marxian-Leninism, or Marxist-Leninism?
Well, it seems to me that Tovarish Lenin has, in the end, triumphed, as has been shown by the collapse of the capitalist system in the past year or so.
Well, Brother Ivan, I think the greatest triumph of Lenin would be in the American football organization, where you know, the communist ideal is most realized. How the players are purchased and traded, it's a communal thing. Understanding, of course, that it is a communal thing within a larger capitalist framework, but it is a singular instance where, like in nature, man can thrive, similar to France.
Would you consider the Marxian position to be the natural way of life, so to speak?
Me personally?
Yes.
Well, I hold the privilege of having never considered the Marxian way of life.
But because it does seem to me to connect very profoundly to the New Age philosophy.
Dr. Van Kochen, perhaps you'd like to address that?
I think that there are many ideas in circulation here that we can bring into conflict with each other, or Aufhebung, as I like to say. And I believe that an idea we can inject into this conversation is that of synchronous non-synchronicity, or non-synchronous synchronicity, or as we say in German, ungleichzeitig Gleichzeitigkeit, or gleichzeitig Ungleichzeitigkeit. That is to say, there are many timelines and converging histories overlapping and juxtaposing each other and perhaps coming into conflict, but not in the sense of a direct clash, more of a circulation and conversation around each other.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very broad, widely applicable statement. Is it a saying in German?
Yes.
And would you mind repeating it for our listeners?
Gleichzeitig, Ungleichzeitigkeit, oder Ungleichzeitig, Gleichzeitigkeit.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I love how the, you know, as a non-speaker of German, there are many repeating sounds there.
I suppose. In how far you repeat them, they are repeated.
Mm-hmm. And George,
yes.
Do you think this saying applies to the? I mean, we have very widely differing views here in the studio. I think it's a privilege. Do you see an application of these views? Do they seem very alien to you as a Mayan person and as a shaman particularly?
As a shaman, yes, I do have a bit of a problem with this. I don't really see applicability of Marxist views at all to my way of life or mm-hmm. the way that we all interact in my society.
And specifically Marxian views?
Yes.
I could imagine that now in the Mayan way of life, traditionally it was centered around the shaman. So I can see that it was more like the structure of a benevolent king, where a single person had the best outlook for the others at heart, and their benevolence was assured by nature. And in that a malevolent shaman, were he to rise to power, would immediately be destroyed, if not by the mountains, then by the river, and if not by the river, then by the other Mayans. And so a long dynasty of benevolent shamans rose to power and led the Mayans to prominence throughout the ages.
I believe that is an accurate way of describing it. But then even now, I don't see a connection necessarily between the New Age movements going on in the U.S. and Marxism either.
Well, I would like to actually reconsider this point, because I think this exploitation of the peoples by the shaman is exactly what Tavarish Lenin and Tavarish Marx have alluded to.
I don't know that I would say exploitation, precisely.
I think that there are manipulations and coercions involved in some of these philosophies that we must take into account to criticize and consider.
I mean, I think the fundamental difference between the Marxian view and the New Age slash Mayan view, let's call it the slash view for the remaining of the hour. The great difference between the two views is that the Marxian view, which we will call the hyphen view, assumes that people are inherently evil, that sooner or later a person who comes to power will necessarily abuse that power, so no person can hold absolute power. Whereas in the slash view, it is assumed that it is not assumed that people are perfect, that is, that a person won't abuse the power, but that if he were to abuse the power, or she, and there is no assumption of sexism in the slash view, as there may be in the hyphen view. I
must interject, because the hyphen has no sexism in hyphen.
All right, so he or she, in either case, may come to power, and then, in the slash view, will be consumed by nature, or by society, or both, or neither, in the case of malevolence, whereas, in the case of benevolence, all will thrive, except for the frogs with three eyes.
Yes, I think that it is actually inappropriate to assume that we are not actually helping people in some senses and that we are only exploiting them. And yes, the three-eyed frogs do play into this quite a bit. They're very important for keeping the balance.
So there is balance. There is no reason that we should call for the destruction of frogs with three eyes.
Of course there's balance. They're certainly not being destroyed, just as we are certainly not exploiting all of our people and our populations. We're helping people.
I must say it's very interesting, because the system of hierarchy that I grew up in, being a sorceress, is very, very different from everything that you guys are talking about. This power that you have defined is very, very different in my circles that we run in. The women have almost absolute power, if you can even call it that, quote unquote, with our sexuality.
So
being
there,
a sorceress.
There is no male sorceress.
No, there are wizards and
Oh, so there is a male counterpart to the sorceress.
There is a male counterpart, but there is no desire or need to be equal because we just are equal. There's no way to separate us. It's we are equal.
So in other words, there is no sexual angst or sexism angst in the sorceress/wizard society, or and maybe we should call it the sorceress wizard society. So the comma society does not have the sort of dynamic because they are equally endowed with power.
Absolutely.
By society or by nature?
By nature. We had attempted to define nature earlier. I'm obsessed with these definitions that we're throwing around and using because I obviously have very, very different definitions, much the way everyone in this room has two different words. But yes, men and women, sometimes you can't even tell the difference between the two of us. There are no systems of hierarchy. It's very, very basic and flatlined.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you bring up this because it seems to me that you have, in a sense, reached the Marxian ideal because you have complete ownership over production and reproduction. But
here's an idea to throw out. We reached that before Marxist was even defined the way that it is. We've reached that. What is it called then?
I would ask about this sorcery shift. What do you think that constitutes a third sort of shift in the work day? Hmm. That is, if you are doing a shift for labor, that is, for monetary compensation, I am guessing that many of you are not sorcerers, paid to be sorcerers, and then you have to come home and feed the little sorceresses and wizard children. And then you would then have sorcery as a third shift on top of these other two. Is that equally divided in the division of labor between wizards and sorceresses?
It's interesting that you should say that. We were talking on previous shows about... I attempted to date at one point. His name was Merlin. And we had talked about the inability and the literal sparks that begin to fly if two wizards or sorceresses are in... intimate positions, and it's almost impossible to develop an offspring. So it's more of a learned habit, not necessarily one that you're born into. You kind of have to suspend the Harry Potter idea where you're born into a family this way. Many of the wizards and sorceresses, if I can call them that I know, have stumbled into the profession. So, I obviously...
So childcare is not an issue then?
No. I have the four people carrying my hair for me, obviously, in the studio that were here last week. And that's basically the idea of family is these four people that are kind of servants to me. I don't have to do anything to them. I don't have to care for them.
One doesn't need to speak for them. They don't speak.
They don't speak. They've been rendered mute, yes.
Hmm. So, as always, the show is not about us disseminating our views. It's about joining with callers and other people, listeners, and the journey together. So if anyone would like to call in and join and enlarge the circle slightly, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome to the air.
Hi.
Hi, marhaban.
Sorry, getting the radio down. I realize that you're largely riffing, but I think there was a real mistake a while back, because I think one of the places where Marxism falls down is its failure to acknowledge any kind of essential evil in human beings, so that there's the belief that when the class struggle is over, or at least when socialism building communism arrives, that because there aren't class tensions, that people will behave well, and so you can trust them with a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
So that, the Marxism is precisely not predicated on the belief that people are inherently evil, but that only economic conditions make them act badly. And again, the belief is once they start going with history and toward eventual communism, that people, you know, that people will behave well, you know, and so it doesn't matter if there's a dictatorship of the proletariat, because the proletariat will be entirely virtuous in the absence of the class struggle.
Precisely, yeah. I think I may have misstated this earlier. It's not that we assume it from the hyphen view that people are necessarily have evil inborn. I think that largely, my co-hosts could correct me, but it's...
I would say that that's one view of Marxism, perhaps an internationalist view that's outmoded and not really consistent with the tradition of Western Marxism in which I am operating, which I think is much more open to incorporating other views of 20th century philosophers. There are Marxian philosophers such as Lukács, who describes Orthodox Marxism as a methodology, not a fixed status, and is certainly... not wearing any kind of red-colored glasses, shall we say, of the idea that once there's the dictatorship of the proletariat, that everything will be just fine. Mm-hmm. Other cultural critics, such as Adorno and Horkheimer, and the tradition of the Gramsci, of course, of the tradition of the Frankfurt School, we see in this tradition more nuanced cultural criticism, and the idea that we don't have to just look to the bosses, but also to the superstructure, and interrogate these unique moments of culture uniquely, and looking, reading them dialectically, even as simple as saying hello or goodbye. I would say if you can read these in a dialectical sense, when I say hello to you, doesn't that, when I see someone on the street and I say hello, does this not also mean goodbye? Because I'm expecting there to be a goodbye. Even a tiny moment like this, we can read dialectically, and we can understand in a broader sense.
Well, that's interesting, because that sounds like a shamanistic sort of insight in which potentialities for things are always in other things. You know, at its greatest, the universe in a grain of sand. But via the Marxian analysis that you've got, you have every hello implying a goodbye, and therefore also implying everything between the two.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm maybe George can speak somewhat to this, because, to be honest, my understanding of the Mesoamerican shamanism was that it did not require this sort of understanding. It was natural. There was enough being in a thing, being simply what it was, that it was not necessary to deeply consider what it was not. But George, perhaps you'd like to say a few words about that?
We do not tend to really consider what things are not. It's more what they are. They exist as they are. And we're aware that they will continue to go in a particular trajectory, really.
I'm not sure if the caller would consider this... is this really a Marxist view?
Actually, I think it's more of a Hegelian view. Not necessarily Marxian, because this is a classical Hegelian dialectic, of course, but we have to bring in the struggle of the proletariat into the equation, because that is what is at stake here. No?
I think what is at stake here is the materiality of non-materiality.
Well, that is immaterial, is it not?
Oh, of course.
Well, I mean, do the shamanic contingent of the panel think that Marxian analysis could benefit from some, say, ayahuasca?
Lilith and George?
There's always something to gain from bringing outside views and sources into an argument.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would agree there. I mean, it seems to me that many philosophers and scientists, and we've brought this forward repeatedly on our program, that it seems ridiculous for a shaman or a New Age practitioner in their search for spirituality to ignore science. And likewise, it it seems foolish for a scientist to ignore spirituality in their pursuit of the truth or of new knowledge. And I think that carries over into this discussion here. And I'm afraid I think we lost our caller. So we have two lines available if anyone would like to call in. 617-253-8810.
Lilith, I was interested in what exactly it is you feel about our exchange with the three-eyed frog and how that relates to nature and plasticity and whatnot.
Well, would there be a three-eyed frog if it were not for the plastics polluting the water down there? It's an interesting chemical reaction that causes this third eye to appear, which we've studied extensively together, attempting to bring together a mixture of new products to develop. I obviously can't say, but...
But you say the word product, and it sounds like a capitalist view, which is interesting because there is this view of sorcery being necessarily Marxist on the whole. So, I don't know, is your group really a capitalist group?
No, I can't say that we are. We don't actually sell products to anyone.
But there is...
Is it more of a guild system?
Yes.
Of alchemical workers?
Yes, absolutely.
And the persons... the hierarchy is ordered by power, by natural power?
Absolutely. As I was saying before, my definition of power is completely different from this Marxist view or definition of power. It is completely... the power of the human in the room with you is the power that is the one that is actual currency. It's not a dollar amount. It's not products being produced for sale. It's this emotional attachment and emotional currency that's actually the most valuable within our culture, which is much the way that I think the world is working. Humans in general gain more from emotional currency than they do from monetary currency.
Even though there is a wide view, maybe not a wide view, but certainly it seems that people are behaving without this knowledge.
But there may be an exchange, right exchange mechanism here, to convert material currency into spiritual and emotional currency. Is there not?
I would believe that. I think it's an unpopular view, but I think it holds some weight.
Well, is it a pegged exchange rate, or what is the nature?
The nature of the exchange from money to emotional happiness?
Yes, because for some people it seems to be a linear relationship.
Well, first of all, I think that there is an effort by the society in which we live to cause someone who is not contributing economically or to the economic enterprise to feel worthless. So, you know, there, if you are not making money and spending money, then you will feel worthless if you are emotionally weak to begin with. So there is one exchange. And secondly, in the interactions between people, obviously, one cannot purchase devotion from anyone unless that person is a mercenary. But with the proper spending applied well, I think one could acquire devotion if one is sufficiently clever.
In capitalist society, we are often told that we must make money in order to spend money. We are given free time, that is, time not at work, not engaged in waged or salaried labor, and we are expected to go to films and spend money at restaurants and engage in these specified, delimited entertainments. Spending money, which requires that we work for having that expendable income and also for you know, in order to know that we what differentiates the workday from the free time. And this itself is a fallacy that we must question.
Let's bring another voice in. Caller, welcome to the air.
Hey, what's up?
Marhaban.
Marhaban to you too. And to your distinguished guest, Marhaban.
Marhaban.
Marhaban. I heard like little snippets of you guys talk. It's a kind of a different talk today. You guys are really into the political thing today. Or the economic thing, I guess, is more of a description for it.
Well, there's really no way around it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just one of those days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in spite of being luminaries and tea masters, you know, we are people and we're living in a greater society.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, unfortunately, I don't know that much about economic theory and stuff, so I don't think I'll be able to contribute much to that discussion.
But yet you live here. I mean, you are contributing to the economy, and maybe that's worth talking about. I mean,
yeah, not that much. I really don't buy stuff at all.
But we are not necessarily speaking about the economy right now. We are having an emotional exchange with you. So currency is being exchanged over the airwaves.
I'm pretty apathetic right now. I'm kind of disconnected. Like, have you ever seen Garden State?
Yes.
Kind of like when that dude is on ecstasy, Zach Braff. And he's sitting in the room and all this stuff's happening around him. That's kind of what it is right now. I just feel like I took some ecstasy.
But yet you are emitting power out into the universe, even if it's this drug-induced power. It is still
a
power.
Well, it's like neutrinos, you know? It doesn't really interact with the rest of the universe.
Well, caller, I think it's very Buddhist. It's like the stone that makes no effort to fall to the bottom of the lake in which the dragon lives. He simply falls and finds naturally the most rapid way to the bottom.
Yeah, that's why rocks are kind of just the the riches of the universe. I don't know what the FCC approves and doesn't, so I'll just say that.
But they are the ground that we walk on and that supports us.
Yeah, that's exactly why. I mean, they don't get to walk on us. You ever think about that? I don't know how happy they are. I think
unless there's a landslide, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. They do get revenge every once in a while, but pretty fleeting over the course of things.
Yeah, these things are always temporary,
mm-hmm.
but they do occur. And likewise, you caller who simply exists unthinkingly, unspendingly. Do you have a job, caller?
I do have a job, actually. A kind of a random job, but yes, I do freelance work for various companies, like doing writing.
Yeah, but see, like the rock, you are trod upon by these do you watch advertisements?
Yeah, I see them a lot on the internet. Yeah.
How do they make you feel?
Pretty ignoring, I guess, would be the word. I never really look at them, and I'm kind of confused as to who exactly is clicking through all these pay-per-click advertisements, because I don't know anyone who has ever bought anything that they saw advertised on an internet sidebar.
And yet these companies continue to exist, and I think, now, I don't know much about Coca-Cola, but I understand that they spend a lot on advertising, and the more they spend, the more money they make.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what that's about, but whenever I watch these Wrigley's Double Mint commercials where they seem to be selling a pair of girls, but they're talking about gum.
Yeah.
Well,
there was like an actual contest that they had where you got to have sex with twins if you won, if you got the right.
Really?
Rapper.
See, now
that
to me seems a little bit morally questionable there.
But you also were able
to. It was hot, so it was okay.
But you were also able to get a year's supply of chewing gum, so I wonder which one was actually more valuable to the winner.
Mm-hmm.
A year of chewing gum?
So the economic answer.
It's kind of like you can't have one without the other, because if you're with the twins and your breath stinks, then what are you even going to do?
Yeah, no, that's precisely right. I mean, the economic question would be, if you had one, could you acquire the other?
Mm-hmm.
And It's certainly, it's not clear to me how, with a pair of twins, one with a fleeting encounter, no less, one could acquire a mountain of chewing gum. But I can imagine, you know, chewing gum famine scenarios where it could generate all sorts of...
And to look at this mathematically, the probability of you spending encounters with a single girl, as you were saying, go up almost exponentially with your supply of chewing gum, because some specific variables are taken out of the equation. So
precisely.
Yeah, and the more chewing gum you have, it, you know, just keeps going up with every... Imagine pulling up to a club and you just pull out of the club and they're just chewing gum falling out of your expensive Italian suit just all over the place, just out of your sleeves, mm-hmm. out of your pants, stuck in your hair. And, like, what are people thinking? They're just thinking, I want to have sex with that chewing gum.
Let's bring in a seventh voice. Caller 3, welcome to the air. Caller 3?
Oh.
Hello?
Don't be shy.
Well, yeah, there are indeed many places around the world where a year's supply of chewing gum could, in fact, get you a year's supply of twins.
Too.
But the question of advertising really brings into play a concept that I think is best described as statistical responsibility or statistical morality. If you're a tobacco executive and you know that if you spend $10 million more, 50,000 more people will smoke in 10.
Caller? Well, the other caller seems to be cutting in and out, but I think...
Well, you guys are sponsored by the tobacco companies, right?
No, we're not.
Oh. Well, I think Emerson College is, so...
Yeah.
I mean, MIT. I guess both.
Well,
I thought university in general were part of the tobacco lobby.
Well, in one sense, we're all part of the same economy.
Right.
So
exactly.
There is that.
Well, we're all proletarian cogs in the capitalist wheel.
We can't exist outside of the capitalist system. To claim an autonomous space and declare it as such is simply a fallacy.
Well, there are some people who are, like, in the desert, right? And they have to make some money through capitalism, first of all. But then they can get off the grid for the rest of their lives. So, you know, you make money and then you create a well and you create some solar power. Some solar panels, sorry, and you just get a little hut going on, some compost heaps, and grow your own crops. Bam.
So sustainability is the watchword here.
Sorry, what?
Sustainability.
Yeah, totally.
And plastic.
And well, actually not that much plastic, but a fair amount.
In a funny way, it is the cornerstone of... you know, capitalism as it is lived here today.
I think plastic is useful more as a metaphor, but I don't think we'll even be using it for that much longer on the grand scheme of things. I mean, I think there are a lot more materials out there that we haven't yet figured out ways to manufacture efficiently that are much better than plastic.
And like all the robots.
Like robots, exactly. Nanotechnology.
Caller, it's amazing the world, you know, I'm much older than anyone else here in the studio, and truly it is amazing how the world has changed in my lifetime. I remember when it was common for people to call me a doctor habitually, like my neighbors, and to say hello if they saw me, and I, in the last decade or so, have begun counting how many times people say, "Hello, how are you?" versus paper or plastic. And it's really comparable, these two numbers. It's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, did you notice how recently the checkout line's been taken over by all those, like, canvas bags and stuff?
Yes.
The canvas bags.
Yeah, I never hear paper or plastic anymore because I just have, like... I have a couple of pairs of pants where I just have the bag stapled to the back of them so I don't forget. And whenever I wear those pants, I'm just... Everyone says hi. and no one asked me paper or plastic because they see it on my pants.
So it cuts something out of the human experience.
Yeah, I mean, I would be terrified that by having bags on my pants, that my overall level of human interaction would go down drastically, because so much of what I hear is, firstly, paper or plastic, and secondly, I'm not sure where you live, but here in Boston, an Arab man with bags stapled to his bottom does not get greeted in the street very often.
Yeah, I mean, my wife left me, but I still have the kids on weekends, so
there is a silver lining to this experiment.
But don't you think that
it's
not cutting out your interaction, just changing the form of it?
Just as technology has changed our interaction at many points in the past, I think that if we remember the chewing gum discussion, that this was another new technology that emerged in the 1940s. It was given out to soldiers in the Second World War. Every soldier was given a pack of chewing gum, just as plastic was distributed widely in that war and then was produced afterwards.
And now we have the baby boomers.
Well, and is it any strange coincidence that gum is at the checkout stand? Where are the papers?
Well, gum is made out of plastic. So.
It's made of rubber, I believe,
from a tree,
rather than it's not a petroleum product.
Well, the trees come from plastic.
I think what the caller is suggesting is that the tree will become plastic.
Yes,
that's what I meant.
This is what I would refer to as Zukunftsangst, or a fear of the future. Mm-hmm. That the tree itself fears becoming the plastic, and therefore it exudes this gummy substance. In preparation.
Let's
just say, please don't turn me into plastic.
Let's take a final caller. Caller 4, welcome to the air.
And never forget that gum was the largest Soviet-era department store.
Gum. It seems that Ivan is familiar with this.
So it's spelled as gum, but it's pronounced as gum.
So capitalism has its gum, and so did socialism building communism.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, likewise, I think analogously, red being the color of communism, representing communism, it is ironic that Coca-Cola, which is so distinctively capitalist, is also red, along with Santa Claus.
Well, I'm not sure it is ironic. I think it's actually quite telling.
There was an amazing commercial for Coca-Cola a few years back where it was entirely in black and white, and the only, except for the red of a Coca-Cola can and the red of a few women's bikinis. It was perfect.
Mm-hmm. But all of this again suggesting that if only you had more Coca-Cola than I did, you know.
Yeah.
That,
it's a powerful message.
It's all about the Coke bottle, and
these are all pathologies induced by scarcity. If we ever grow up, that is, get to a technical level where we don't have to extort our livings and be extorted, then at that point I think we'll be harder to control by these means.
That scarcity is an economist excuse for what is actually a question of distribution and what can be solved by a redistribution. That is to say, there are not enough acres in the world to support everyone in the world living at the level of lifestyle as the people in the United States or other so-called developed countries. That there are simply not enough of this earth to support everyone having a car in the garage and a chicken in every pot. That in order to have redistribution, that there needs to be a raising up of the poorest of the poor, but also there needs to be a reduction in the way that some people are living at the top.
But there's an interesting fallout of that, which is a lot of the biggest innovation in getting more out of the land, getting more efficient, extraction of petroleum and stuff like that is concentrated in the Western countries that have the most money, for research and stuff. So if there was complete redistribution, you know, there would be less innovation, at least for a while.
I think the question is really sustainability and to what extent these new technologies are promoting sustainability or getting us away from that goal. If it's just an immediate gratification, a petroleum now kind of motivation, then that's not leading us towards sustainability or the reduction of poverty in the world.
Well, callers and hosts, I'm sorry to have to do this, but we're reaching the end of the hour and have to say goodbye.
Bye.
So, Masana, to our callers and to our new host, George.
Yes.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And to Professor Dr. Zina Pfannkuchen.
Yes, Pfannkuchen.
Pfannkuchen. And to Lilith the Sorceress.
It is always a pleasure.
The pleasure is ours. And to the extremely mellow Ivan the Mellow.
Спасибо, and in the words of товарищ Ленин, учиться, учиться и учиться.
I'm Editor Jalis Sakran here with Music for Humans on Fridays at 7 p.m. New Age talk show with an emphasis on you. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Ma'a salama.
For safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or